the year.
Recreating notable events of passing time. Reviving memories of men and women who have contributed to the history of a modern world. ...1898, that was the year. Approximately 100 miles south of the southernmost tip of the U.S., Key West, Florida, lies an island discovered by Columbus during his first voyage to the New World on October 27, 1492, Cuba. For four centuries under the control of Spain, the Star of Cuba had risen and fallen many times. Under some governors, she had enjoyed liberal government, public improvements, increased prosperity. Under others, she had suffered ignominious political suppression, economic privation, famine, and disease. The natural result of this tyrannical domination at most times without the knowledge of the mother country was revolution. Because of the proximity of Cuba to the North American continent, the fertile island rich in sugar, coffee, tobacco, and tropical fruits became increasingly important to the U.S., and the Cuban political difficulties added greatly to the worries of American Congresses and a succession of presidents. In 1897 and 98, anti-Spanish rioting and subsequent reprisals by Spanish officers came so dangerously close several times to American citizens and American property that in January 1898, the USS Maine of the North Atlantic Squadron, under the command of Captain Charles Dwight Sigsbee, was sent to Havana, where she arrived on the 25th of the month, ostensibly on a mission of peace. In reality, to guard American lives and property.
Washington, D.C., February 16, 2 a.m.
Secretary of Navy John D. Long is awakened by a servant.
Mr. Long? Mr. Long?
Oh, yes? Oh, what is it?
Telegram, sir.
Telegram? Give it to me. Maine blown up in Havana Harbor at 9:40 tonight and destroyed. Many wounded and doubtless more killed or drowned. Wounded and others on board Spanish man of war and ward line steamer. Send lighthouse tenders from Key West for crew and few pieces of equipment above water. No one has clothing other than that upon him. Public opinion should be suspended until further report. All officers believed to be saved. Jenkins and Merritt not yet accounted for. Many Spanish officers, including representatives of General Blanco, now with me to express sympathy. Sigsbee. Why, this is horrible. It can mean nothing less than war.
But public opinion could not be suspended. And when on March 28th, President William McKinley reported to Congress...
The ship was destroyed by the explosion of a submarine mine, which caused the partial explosion of two or more of her forward magazines.
A cry arose in a deafening crescendo.
Remember the Maine.
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 The American public clamored for vengeance for the deaths of 266 men and officers. The American public, led by an avid press, wanted war. Nothing could stop the inevitable tide. And President McKinley, dedicated to the preservation of peace, knew that war could not be averted.
March 9.
The U.S. Congress appropriates $50 million for national defense.
April 20.
A joint resolution is passed by Congress.
Resolved that the people of Cuba are, and of a right ought to be, free and independent. That it is the duty of the United States to demand that the government of Spain at once relinquish its authority and government in the island of Cuba and withdraw its land and naval forces from Cuba and Cuban waters.
April 23.
President McKinley calls for 125,000 volunteers.
On the same day?
Even before official declaration of war, Secretary of the Navy Long cabled Commodore George Dewey in command of the U.S. Asiatic Fleet in Hong Kong.
War has commenced between the United States and Spain. Proceed at once to Philippine Islands. Commence operations at once, particularly against Spanish fleet. You must capture vessels or destroy. Use utmost endeavors.
April 25.
Being enacted by the Senate and House of Representatives of the United States of America and Congress assembled, that war be, and the same is hereby declared to exist, between the United States of America and the Kingdom of Spain.
Secretary of the Navy, Washington. The squadron arrived at Manila at daybreak this morning. Immediately engaged enemy and destroyed 11 Spanish vessels. I shall destroy Cavite Arsenal Dispensatory. The squadron is uninjured. Few men are slightly wounded. Dewey, Manila, May 1.
Unaware that this terse dispatch proclaimed to an anxiously awaiting nation that his squadron had been the victors in one of the major naval engagements of all times, Commodore George Dewey returned later to find himself a world hero, an admiral for life, and to find that the historic Battle of Manila Bay had established American naval eminence among world powers, and an effect more important at that moment. Manila Bay became the stimulus for action within the borders of the U.S.
Key West, May 26.
A squadron under Commodore Winfield Scotchlay begins the chase of the Spanish fleet under Admiral Pascual Tavera. Meanwhile, at Tampa, Florida, makeshift headquarters had been established, for the regular and volunteer army forces awaiting embarkation for Cuba.
Say, I never expected to run into anything like this. Most of my men are running around without shoes or socks.
Where are you from, Lieutenant?
First Missouri. Just got in yesterday.
Now, wait till you're here a week. My men have been issued the old black powder Springfield. You know what those are going to do when we meet up with those Spaniards. They're going to be the best targets you ever saw. While the Spaniards have all got smokeless powder rifles.
Yeah, that's what I've heard, too. You ought to see the mess pans my regiment's got. They're from the Civil War. The War Department found them in an old storehouse.
What do you mean? Well, Colonel, who's the laugh on?
You, I guess, man. I guess you don't know how to work this war business. Why, my men have got brand new khaki tropical uniforms, smokeless powder rifles, sidearms, and the best lineup of horses you ever saw.
How can you get that kind of equipment when we can't, sir? Who are you, anyway?
Theodore Roosevelt, Lieutenant Colonel of the 1st U.S. Volunteer Cavalry.
May 31.
Major General William R. Shafter, Tampa. When will you be ready to sail? Report progress made. Alger, War Department.
Russell A. Alger, Secretary of War, Washington. Progress is rapid, but cannot sail before Saturday, June 4. Shafter. War Department, Washington. It is not possible to complete embarkation before Monday night. Difficulties in loading cannot be appreciated. Shafter.
General Shafter, Tampa. When will you leave? Answer at once. Alger.
Tuesday, June 7.
General Shafter, Tampa. You will sail immediately. Time is the essence of the situation. Early departure of first importance. Alger, War Department. General Shafter. Since telegraphing you an hour since, the President directs you to sail at once with what force you have ready. Alger, War Department.
To all commanding officers, you will prepare to sail at daybreak tomorrow. Move your commands at once to Tampa Harbor. Report to Colonel Humphrey for assignment to your respective passports. Shafter.
And that was the signal for one of the most hectic, most amazing war scenes in history. After days of futile attempts to organize equipment and men and transportation to take both to the transport ships lying idly in the harbor, the Harris General Shafter finally decided to adopt the course of every man for himself. The 9th Infantry appropriated a wagon train from the 6th Infantry and proceeded to Tampa Bay. The 71st New York Volunteers commandeered a railroad train belonging to the 13th Infantry, whose officers at length discovered some empty cattle cars which they immediately possessed. Colonel Leonard Wood and his dashing Lieutenant Colonel Roosevelt at 3 o'clock in the morning seized some coal cars and moved their Rough Riders, sans horses, to the harbor, where they rushed to one of the transports, the Yucatan, and held her against the expostulating officers of the 71st New York and 2nd Regular Infantry Regiments to whom the ship had been originally assigned. At length, the great task was done. Most of the armed forces were aboard the ships ready to sail. At 2 o'clock in the afternoon, General Shafter dropped his weary 300-pound form onto his bunk for a long-needed rest. His head had hardly touched the pillow when his adjutant burst in.
General Shafter, General.
Yes, what is it?
A telegram from Secretary Alger, sir. It's quite important.
Well, didn't you wire him we were ready to sail?
Yes, sir. That's just it.
What are you talking about? Let me see that telegram. Wait until you get further orders before you sail. Answer quick. Oh, my God.
And because the captain of the converted yacht Eagle had thought he had seen a Spanish cruiser in St. Nicholas Channel, the army was to lie at anchor in Tampa Bay for another week. The captain of the Eagle had not seen a Spanish cruiser, however, for the entire Spanish fleet was safely bottled up in the harbor of Santiago de Cuba, with the American Atlantic Squadron under Admiral William T. Sampson guarding the narrow entrance against the escape of Admiral Tavera's ships. But, at last on June 14, sailing orders arrived, and General Shafter's 5th Army Corps, huddled in 32 small coastwise vessels, were on their way to Cuba.
June 22.
The Americans have landed at Siboney, 16 miles from Santiago.
July 1.
The Americans have taken the strategic points of El Caney, Las Guasimas, and San Juan Hill. In the latter engagement, Roosevelt's Rough Riders have supplied half the men.
July 3.
Admiral Tavera attempts to break through the American blockade and surrenders after every Spanish ship is either sunk or driven ashore.
July 17.
On this Sunday morning, General José Torrals salutes the Spanish flag flying over Santiago for the last time, hauls it down and rides out of the city to surrender to Major General Shafter.
July 27.
General Nelson A. Miles overruns the island of Puerto Rico.
December 10.
A treaty of peace was signed tonight in Paris, France, by representatives of the hostile nations. Spain ceding to the U.S., Cuba, Puerto Rico, all other Spanish islands in the West Indies, Guam, and the Philippine Islands.
And the war with Spain came to an end. The war that taught the U.S. that she was woefully unprepared for conflict. And out of those 5 months came a song which, although written for McIntyre and Heath's minstrels 2 years previously, is today as much a part of the Spanish-American War as Theodore Roosevelt's toothy smile and his characteristic expletive...
That's bully! Just bully. I'm delighted.
When you hear that great tune does begin, bend down low for to drive away your sin. And when you get religion, you want to shout and sing. There'll be a hot time in the old town tonight, my baby. When you hear them bells go ding-a-ling, all join round and sweetly you must sing. And when the first and through, in the chorus all join in, there'll be a hot time in the old town tonight. Hot time in the old town.